Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future.
history because back, what was it, the late 19th century, I guess, a little German concern called Bayer had two substances they were working on, and both of them were wonder drugs.
One of them being aspirin.
One of them was aspirin, and the other one was heroin. Because heroin is a synthesized product. I mean, opium is just opium. You've got to work on it to turn it into heroin.
Well, I know Uncle Ho was selling plenty during his bout against the French in particular, because he was trying to raise money to, for of all things, have those people run their own country. Come on now, what the hell? And you know who General Giap is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he just passed away at, what, age over 100, and he was raising hell in the hallways of Vietnam with this Westerners coming in there and exploiting the Vietnamese workers, like they do in every place else in Asia, you know.
Right.
And, of course, they didn't want to listen to this guy. Oh, well, he was the man who whipped the French and gave Americans a hard way to go.
But what's fascinating, if you look at both heroin and if you look at opium and the coca leaf, opium, and anybody who knows their history knows that the opium wars were started in China, not by the Chinese, but by the British, who were insisting that the opium market be kept open and a steady supply continue flowing into Europe. But you've got to work on opium to turn it into heroin.
Yep.
And the same thing applies to the coca leaf. Now, God knows how many millions of dollars we spent on coca eradication in places like Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, you know, the Andean countries. But the fact of the matter is, the magnificent cultures that arose there used that, and we're talking about cities that are sitting at 10,000 feet altitude, okay? And I mean, I'll never forget the one and only time I've ever had altitude sickness. It was a trip I took a couple of years ago out to Utah, and I don't know, I thought I was getting some sort of Mormon emphysema just from being in Utah or something. Headache, lightheaded, stupid. And then I noticed, yes, my filthy habit. I noticed it was taking about 20 minutes for a cigarette to burn down.
Mm-hmm.
I went, oh, there's no oxygen here. I'll be dipped. But as it turned out, the brilliant peoples of those Andean cultures would take a couple of coca leaves, wrap it around a piece of lime rock, you know, as a sort of catalyst, tuck it between their cheek and gum like old Walt Garrison did with his Skoll or his Copenhagen. I remember the ads. I can't help it. It's on a brain cell. And that makes you able to process oxygen much more efficiently at those high altitudes and, you know, climb all over, you know, get your, go on about the business of living. It's only when white people get hold of it and start applying that high, Western European technology to it, to get cocaine. I mean, you've got to really, really give a coca leaf a workout to get to cocaine. Just like you've got to give opium a workout to get it to heroin. And in both cases, it was done. Why? To make money. There's our old friend capitalism torturing us again. I mean, you know, we've got a war on drugs. And yet the drug trade, even though it's deemed to be illicit, the drug trade is nothing but capitalism in its purest and finest form. Right? I mean, have I got this wrong?
No, you got it right. That's also interesting on the little war on drugs in your coca leaves. I think it was on Current. They were doing a little special. They were showing about the way that they're fighting them by just going and by air spraying areas. And it's destroying some of the cultures there because they can't grow their food or anything. It's
right.
Everything dies. It's kind of like what we did with Agent Orange, except some other type of herbicide.
Well, let me throw out another magic word that a lot of us will probably remember. Paraquat.
Oh, yes, sir.
Anybody remember paraquat? And the big deal that was made out of when the United States government, using taxpayer money, started flying over what were deemed to be marijuana patches in Mexico and Colombia and spraying this herbicide on them, and then all the little pot smokers are, I hope this isn't none of that paraquat weed.
Yes, sir. I remember that stuff going around here.
And all in, you know, all in the name of what? Well, look at the prescription drug trade we have now.
Yeah. Yeah. If I call my doctor and say I got a hangnail, well, here, I'll send you a prescription for that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably depressed about it too, aren't you, Bill?
Yeah. Well, here, take some. Oh, don't even get me started. I had my first wife.
Yeah, and since you're on antidepressants, go ahead and take this Abilify also.
Yeah.
Speaking of the war on drugs, here in Vermont, we have I've mentioned on Malloy a couple of places, we have a large contingent of the Air Force here, F-16s, Air Guard, and we use our Air Guard with their FLIR infrared heat scopes and like to go out and look for pot farms.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a real nice use of our money.
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time, too. It is a waste of money.
Well, they use the Air Guard here to look for, you know, we've got a lot of little hills and hollers and crannies and stuff, that, you know, the ones that haven't been blown up, and there are some rather enterprising hillbillies out there who engage in some sort of, I don't know, what would we call it, free market entrepreneurship agronomy?
Yeah. Well, it used to be the old story, Bob, and you know, how do you get corn down from the mountains in West Virginia?
Well, you reduce it to liquid and put it in a barrel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I knew I would stretch. I knew I would strike a memory nerve here. Jan just wrote in and said, oh, yeah, I remember all over Southern California the worry of paraquat.
Yep.
And wasn't there even a Saturday Night Live skit with John Belushi where they flew over and sprayed him or something? It was kind of edgy for the time.
Wouldn't surprise me if when those guys were at their best, they were doing stuff like that.
Were they doing the bees skit?
Oh, God, I remember the bees. Well, that's okay.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Jeremy.
I was going to say, you mentioned in the past, but elaborate a little more. What did you think of the whole Discovery Channel of moonshiners?
Oh,
how
yeah,
they pitted as we knew who these guys were, but could never catch them, and acted like they're all like friends on themselves. On the sides of it.
Oh, God, please. Yay. No. No. And, well, is the Hatfields and McCoys still on?
Yes.
Lightning?
That's H2, though. That's a different channel.
I thought that was on A&E or History.
It was on History?
Yeah, it's on History, too, but Moonshiner is on Discovery.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because they went and gave the really kind of the one of those moonshiners his own show. It's called Tickle now. Remember Tickle, the funny boys? Also, he was Stone. Yeah, that guy.
Oh, make it stop. And by the way, I was corrected by Horst on Facebook. It's not the stupid it hurts as us. It's the stupid it burns. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mind the bootleggers thing if it was you at least saw how it was done, and then I was working in a bar in the inner city, and one of the guys brought in a jug of white stuff, and me and a couple other guys went back to taste it. And, oh, my God, I thought somebody had kicked me in the head. That stuff is something, too.
Well, there's a reason they call some of it Pop Skull.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, a note coming in from Mark. He says, listening from Champaign, Illinois tonight, tomorrow we'll be attending Cardinals game with 34-year IBEW veteran and childhood buddy, Semper Fi to my proud union and pro-union liberal buddies, signed Mark, Veteran for Peace. Mark, of course, is a proud, I believe Mark's a proud carpenter. So, and they'll probably have a grand old time in St. Louis. Because the Dodgers it's kind of falling apart, aren't they?
They're stumbling. You know, the whole idea, unions were so, again, when I was a youngster, man, the union was the thing, man. It was all the guys I knew that were making a living, who were working in industry, were working in a union job. And you couldn't drive a damn milk truck without being a Teamster, you know?
Speaking of St. Louis, the IBEW was born in St. Louis in a beer hall.
Nice.
That's right.
In 1891, Local One is in St. Louis.
And boy, were those guys that founded those unions public enemies whenever they could make them that way. Whenever they could paint them in that position.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that, Doctor. I wonder if it had to do what I wonder was what you said a beer hall. So what?
Stolte's Beer Hall in St. Louis in 1891. There's a bunch of linemen that got together and started organizing.
Well, those bars were social parlors in those days for a lot of things. You're right.
Henry, the only name I remember is Henry Miller because he was the first president of the IBEW. I read all the history, but it was years ago. I slept since then.
Yeah.
Back when I was an organizer, I read the history of the IBEW. You can read it online.
Well, a buddy of mine worked for the outdoor electric company and the illuminating company, and he was on his way to a wedding, and he's wearing a tux. Pouring down rain, he drives past a truck, and these are his buddies that he works with. So he gets out to give him a hand with something. The lady said to me, he said, I imagine everybody who saw a guy helping with wiring wearing a tuxedo started bitching about that's why their bill was so high. I mean, people were, I don't know, the working man was tight in the old days. They were working, they were tight with each other. They may have hated each other's guts until they were going up against the company. Then all of a sudden they liked each other a lot.
You still get a little bit of that.
Are you working
especially
right now?
Especially in the IBEW. No, I'm at home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll be joining
these calls from work as of next week, though.
Yeah, your shift is changing significantly, isn't it?
Yeah, it changes every month, bro. I'm going starting Saturday, I'll be going on at 3 to 11. I'll have Mondays and Tuesdays off.
I know
that. That's 1,500 to 2,300.
Okay, I have to ask here because somehow or another I managed not to touch on it during the filibuster. We all know about what happened during the vote last night in the House, right?
Yeah.
Diane Reedy.
Yeah, the gal that went nuts.
Yeah, talking about flipping out over Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
Was anybody surprised? I mean, I thought it was a little strange.
I'm surprised because the Freemasons are a strong mainstream bunch. You know, they've been held back in the Civil War. Guys on both sides were Masons. That's why the Knights of Columbus came up in the Catholic area because for too many years.
The symbol is Catholic.
I didn't catch any of it.
The symbol is the all-seeing eye, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the square and compass.
Was it some tea party?
The all-seeing eye is on our money.
Well, that's the thing. This woman was a longtime employee of the House of Representatives. She was one of the stenographers who takes down, word for word, for purposes of creating the congressional record, the words that are said by the members on the floor. And out of nowhere, as the vote's going down, she goes to the podium and says, "He will not be mocked. He will not be mocked. The greatest deception here is that this is not one nation under God. It never was. It never was. Had it been, it would not have been. The Constitution would not have been written by Freemasons. They go against God. You cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve two masters. Praise be to God, Lord Jesus Christ."
Well, that's one of those... That's one of those things that a lot of people really get hung up on. I don't know how much truth there is to any of it, to myself. I mean, but I know lodges of all kinds in this country at the turn of the century. If you didn't belong to a lodge, you weren't an American.
Well, it's interesting.
You must be part of the Reconstruction movement, huh?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is this, my immediate thought was, well, I think we've got a Beck viewer listener here.
More like Alex Jones, because he's one of the books.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't I think of Alex Jones? Yeah, this is straight out of the Alex Jones playbook. Because there are people out there who absolutely lose their minds over Freemasons. I mean, they buy all that Dan Brown stuff, and, oh, please.
and I'm sure he was already, before it was over with, he was already saying false flag.
No, it's already been, yeah, this was some devious plot by Barack Obama to make the teabaggers look bad.
Yeah.
You know what stirred all this up was also there was a guy called Brad Meltzer, or something like that, some crappy name. And he had a show on history. Well, we know where history's gone over the years. And it was called Decoded. And he was all about conspiracy theories, from George Washington being a devil worshiper to Lewis and Clark, the one who died mysteriously, was murdered because he found out something on the side of the country that no one was supposed to know about, so they killed him so he couldn't talk about it.
Yeah, it probably involved Reformed Egyptian or something like that.
The end of the show, he concluded that someone snuck up and shot Lewis in the head because he'd found out about some secret society on the other side of the country, which wasn't formed yet. But I blame him for a lot of this stuff, too. I mean, he's just as crazy as Alex Jones. He probably worships the same altar.
Well, I just got a tweet in from Sandra saying, how come she isn't considered crazy? Well, she was, after she was interviewed by Capitol Police, she was taken away for a mental hygiene examination. But, and you know, the thing is, it is not illegal to be mentally ill in this country. The standard for some form of involuntary hospitalization in a lot of jurisdictions, you have to prove that, A, there's a mental illness, and then you have to prove that the mentally ill person is a danger to herself or others. And, you know, you can get over that first hurdle with a lot of folks, but, you know, just having loopy ideas or, you know, having spent too many hours with Alex Jones babbling poison into her ears, isn't enough to necessarily get you committed. But isn't it interesting that this woman, she was strange, her behavior was erratic. On the other hand, a couple of weeks ago, we had a woman get her face shot off, who was immediately then described as being, she was crazy.
I didn't know that was against the law.
Well, the one
after
thing
people I know
would
be in jail. I don't know.
The one thing you're forgetting is a lot of the congressmen knew this woman, and that's a big difference because they were trying to talk her down while she was doing this last night. A lot, you know, the difference being they knew her. They had formed relationships with her, so to speak, and so I'm sure the reason was why she was not charged. And that's why she went to the mental facility, so they didn't have to charge her with interrupting a meeting or whatever the charge would be for interrupting Congress, you know, causing a disturbance, something like that. So I bet that's she was told to either go to the mental facility or face charges.
Yeah,
I got a...
Go ahead, Duncan.
I got a homework assignment.
Oh, yeah?
Take out a $1 bill, look at the back of the $1 bill, and there's the pyramid with the all-seeing eye floating above it, and then some kind of Latin writing around it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know why that's there to begin with.
Well,
George Washington's on the front. You know, he was a Mason, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And those two things on the back of the $1 bill are the obverse and reverse of the Great Seal of the United States. The part with the eagle and the stars forming the six-pointed star above the eagle. That's the front of the Great Seal. The back is the is with the pyramid and all-seeing eye,
mm-hmm.
and the Latin underneath it on a banner. Reads Novus Ordo Seclorum. That means new order of the ages.
Okay, well, there's a TV show that's ongoing right now called Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you're watching it, Jeremy?
I love Revolution just because it's sci-fi and I'm into it. I'm also kind of into the new Sleepy Hollow thing. Even though it's way out, I'm into that too because it's a different take on it.
Well, the Patriot stamp thing on their file folders is the all-seeing eye. Have you noticed
don't you get
that?
Yeah, but don't you get the feeling in this show the Tea Party are the patriots in this show? They're evil?
I'm starting to get that way, yeah.
I mean, it definitely appears they're the ones that dropped the nuke in the first season, or let them go down.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling it's kind of a reference towards the Tea Party, even though they'll never say it. They're calling them patriots.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a good show. I do enjoy it.
Now, to be fair, this is, you know, you can't be, you don't necessarily have to subscribe to any particular Protestant faith in order to be a Mason, but you do, kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous, have to acknowledge a higher power. You have to believe in God, no atheists. So what that, so that, that eye in the separated capstone of the pyramid is the eye of God, and Anuit Coeptis, which is the Latin motto over the top of it, means he approves of our undertaking, or he approves of the undertaking. And then underneath it says Novus Ordo Seclorum, and if you check out the fine print, at the base of the pyramid is the are the Roman numerals for 1776. So I mean, and that's the thing. There's nothing magical or special or creepy hoodoo about masonry. What it is it's a lodge, and lodges have high signs. And there was a heyday of lodges in France and England. And it's all about being exclusive. You know, it's just like a country club. It's fun being in a country club if everybody can join. It's only fun if you get to exclude people. So one of the essences of the lodge is that you get to blackball anybody, and one blackball will do it. Nobody, you don't get to join if you get blackballed.
And of course, nobody knows who puts out that blackball, is it?
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think so, yeah.
So, and you know, they've got, they're into ritual, and they've got things that they do, and special ceremonies, and,
Well, I just think it's weird. I don't think there's anything evil or, conspiracy worthy of it.
Oh, but Jason, there are people who do, like this woman, this stenographer for the house, that's why she was screaming about Freemasons, because
the Freemasons and the Knights Templar.
There's a very famous portrait of George Mason, George Washington, wearing his little Masonic apron, because you know it was a big deal. And if you ever go through, I think it's Alexandria, Virginia, where the main Grand Lodge is. I mean, it looks like a damn ziggurat, you know, from ancient times.
What's the ziggurat?
Ziggurat is the sort of huge temple complex that was developed in Mesopotamia in the earliest civilizations. They're kind of like stepped pyramids.
I wanted to, it's Larry here. Hi.
Hey, Larry.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question. A couple of things. First about, the environment, and secondly, another question I have. And the first question, there's, a movement that Grant's told me about, Grant Gibson, that comes on, and I've had a couple of the books. It's a community-based, theoretical community-based movement that is supposed to be there to respond to climate change and peak oil. It's called Transition Towns. And I was wondering how West Virginia and coal country sees the notion of developing a sustainable community for people in that area that doesn't won't depend upon necessarily on oil or on coal, and will provide for the needs of each person's community without necessarily, if you don't have a lot of money to buy a lot of consumer goods or consume a lot of stuff, whether or not people can develop a lifestyle in your state, or you can develop a lifestyle that doesn't necessarily need to be hooked on the oil, and you can still have a life where you have your family and you have enough good food to eat, and you can, you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, Larry, there are some people who sort of fantasize about that here, and they like to they like to think that someday they can build it. Maybe someday they can. But for instance, as someone who is researching trying to get the horn out of the business of using electricity that that comes from blowing up mountains, I can tell you that this state makes it something approaching impossible to not use fossil fuels. I mean, this state is openly hostile towards sustainable energy, whether it be geothermal, solar, or wind.
But they've exploited the entire economic, they've exploited the resource base. People have been poor in that state for generations after generations through no fault of, through no fault of their own, and yet still continuing the same behavior. You see what, state is still impoverished.
You know, Bob, that does bear mentioning that you got a lot of flat mountaintops would be great places for windmills.
No, they're not.
Oh, they really aren't?
Yeah, they really aren't, because when you blow a mountain all to hell, Jason, and then you try to pile it back up in place, there are all kinds of competing engineering theories of, you know, do we tamp it down really tight? Or do we leave it kind of loose and, all in terms of, returning it to some semblance of reclaimed stability? The one thing we know from, for instance, the Coal River Wind Project of several years back, those are some big-ass units, right? The industrial wind turbines. They've got a pretty substantial substructure to hold them in place. Because, the vibrations from the turning of the turbines and everything over time loosen stuff up. That's why they have to be maintained by people who are specially trained to do exactly that. And there is no way to make the ground stable enough once you've blown a mountain away. It just can't be done. And the other thing is the mountain has to be intact in order for the turbines, which are roughly 30 stories high, to
300 feet.
Yeah, to reach the industrial scale winds. So if the mountain is intact and you put wind turbines on the ridge line, they'll reach up into those high grade industrial winds. If you've taken the mountain down 800 feet, you're not gonna you'd have to make it 11. The hub of the turbine would have to be at 1100 feet.
Ah, thank you very much for dispelling a myth.
The other question that I had about dominant group and minority group relations is it looks like what the society does is the society has historically placed how the minority relationships have, and I'm not going to answer that call, I'm sorry, I hope it doesn't bother anybody. What happens, what happens is these groups get exploited over time, and they're exploited by the larger society. And then when they get to the point of where they finally begin to fight back, because they haven't been able to fight back, they will finally stand up for themselves and explode, or some people, kids will, like in ghetto situations.
Yeah.
But then what happens is it seems that the very group that's been exploited and taken advantage of are the very people that end up going to prison and stuff, and the society doesn't take, like Tom Hayden has said, the society doesn't take proper responsibility for its part in creating racism and sexism and what have you, and then the person who is the victim has to go through the religious experience or the spiritual experience of changing their behavior in order to assimilate themselves into the dominant society who is largely responsible for creating the problem in the first place. Do you see what I'm? But I don't understand that logic. Why is it that the group that's been mostly, the group that's been exploited the most, why do they have to be the ones, and why are they picked out individually as being people that need to have, you know, a change of heart rather than the society having the change of heart. You see where I'm going with this? That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because we're goddamn capitalists here, Larry. Whatever we do to make money and however it affects anybody else, we don't care.
But the victims, the people who have been taken advantage of and the people who have been abused by the society, by our practices of racism and sexism and economic, whatever you call it, economic exploitation, if they end up freaking out and getting and protesting, or if they end up acting out in more dangerous ways, then they're the ones that have to go to prison or go through the change individually rather than the society accepting the responsibility for what it did.
Because there's a dollar.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. Because
I don't think you are, Jason. It's because
we're goddamn capitalists, and by God, if you go to prison, we're going to make money off your ass again.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that's the bottom line. The essence of capitalism is the complete exploitation of the entire planet. Everything that walks, flies, swims, crawls, breathes, lays still, is dormant, hibernates, just sits there. Capitalism is consumptive. Capitalism is earth cancer. Okay?
Yep.
So everything gets exploited. My ancestors were here long before coal was ever discovered, Larry. And so what the coal companies, and like everybody else whose ancestors were here too, the coal companies came in, and the first thing they, I mean, you've got people who had been settled on their land for 100 years or more, 150 years, okay? Longer than that. The coal companies come in, and you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have a great education, whose forebears have been successfully, sustainably farming their land and living and you know. And they come in, and they've got this thing, you can look it up, Larry, if you want to later, called a broad form deed. And they generally arrive on the front stoop of the old farmer's house with a bottle of liquor and their broad form deed, and they say, well, we're going to give you some money.
Yeah, it sounds like what they do to Native Americans, too.
Well, it's the same. Yeah. Well, it's certainly the same school of exploitation, because the essence of capitalism is exploitation.
I want to add something to that. And in capitalism, human beings are seen as resources to be used to the point of exhaustion or collapse. Period.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Because it seems that our psychology, the way in which we look at psychology, the way in which we look at sociology, along with economics, is thoroughly infused with this sort of Judeo-Christian work ethic. And if you're not willing to sit there and suffer, and if you're not willing to give a whole lot more than you get back, you're a sinner, or you're not worthy. You complain too much, or you have too many needs. And you've got to learn how to you've got to learn how to have gratitude for what you have before you can expect that anybody else is going to be there to support you, or before you're ever in any position to appreciate what anybody else, you know, before you can expect anything from anybody else. I don't know. That's partially my trip too, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, but. The only thing I can advise, Larry, is don't overthink it. Capitalism doesn't care who it kills. Capitalism doesn't care who it runs over. Capitalism doesn't care what it consumes. Capitalism's only job is to consume. It's like a Star Trek monster.
Okay.
It's like the Blob. You remember that horror show, The Blob?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Is that movie?
Yeah, okay, movie.
The deed is called
broad form deed.
Okay, I'm going to look at that.
You know, another thing to add to your reading list, Larry, if you really want, and maybe I've suggested this in the past, is Harry Caudill's book Night Comes to the Cumberlands.
You have mentioned it. I have it somewhere in the house, and Duncan and you all know what my house is like. So, So if I ever open up one of these boxes or something, I have it because I had it for an anthropology class for an introductory anthropology class at UC Berkeley back in 1975 or 6, something like that. It's called Night Comes to the Cumberlands, and the foreword is by Michael Harrington. That's what I remember.
That's the one.
Yes.
Larry, do you use the Dewey Decimal System in Larry's library?
No, I don't use the Dewey Decimal System, nor do I use the Library of Congress classification system. Things are not alphabetized. I've got so much stuff here, I don't know what I would do with it. And most of it I haven't read. I'm sorry. But, well, why am I apologizing? It's the truth. So that tells you something about me, too.
Well,
okay.
Just remember, waiting is. I mean, it all in due time.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, and I got a copy of 1493, by the way.
Good.
Got it. I didn't get 1491, but I got a... they were both available, but I got a hardback copy for a cheaper price.
Well, you kind of need 1491 first.
You don't have to,
but it helps a lot. Who was saying something?
Bob, I was going to ask that broad form D. That sounds a lot like the reverse mortgages.
No, it was more pernicious. Because what the broad form D did is it cheated for very little money the landholder out of his mineral rights because, see, capitalism and Anglo-American jurisprudence have this idea that everything is for sale and everything can be owned. So if you can sell it, you can subdivide it. You can sell your minerals but keep your surface. And that's what they would come and they would say to these farmers. They'd say, listen, we're just buying your minerals. And you can go on living here and everything, but we're just going to buy your minerals.
Right.
And the next thing you know, they're throwing his ass out, and he suddenly has nowhere to live. So guess what he has to do?
Well, relocate.
The money's gone. So he turns around, moves into a coal company shanty town, and goes to work for slave labor wages for the coal company.
Yep.
Isn't that neat how that works?
God.
Wow, that's very nice. Yeah.
I don't understand what they did during the Dawes Act. I think that what they did is they took the land and then they tried to teach Native Americans how to con them by telling them that they had their own little piece of land that they owned and that they could farm it.
But well, and right, Larry, and the problem was that there was a concerted effort by the U.S. government to take Indian lands that were communally, tribally held for the good of the entire group, and they say, no, you're going to have an acre, and you're going to have an acre, and you're going to have an acre, and you're going to work your acre, and he's going to work his acre, and they're going to work their acre. And effectively, I mean, there's genocide, which is the mass killing of human beings, but there's also a sort of culture side, if that's
yes.
the word.
Yes.
Where you so fundamentally upset the basic tenets of the cultural common agreement that it cannot any longer function.
Yeah. Well, something tells me if I ever read the history of the Appalachian region that I would be crying forever because
there was a documentary done some years back, and if you look around long enough, you will probably find it. It is simply called The Appalachians.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Sissy Spacek narrates it, and I think it ran on PBS. But mm-hmm. if you look around, you'll find it. I'll bet it might be on that one website, Duncan.
Which one's that?
The one you turned us all on to.
Oh, the Vayus?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, that's where
I'll look for it for Larry.
Well, there's Couch Tuner, but I don't know if that's the one.
No, that's not it, Larry. I'll see if I can find it for you.
And anybody who wants to watch it, it's a brilliant little documentary. It really is. It explains things like the broad form deed, and it is certainly a better primer on Appalachia than say the Hatfields and McCoys. Because there's so much more to it than that. I was talking Bill and I had an off-air conversation last night, and I was telling him a little bit about one of my forebears, my great-grandfather. He was born in 1860. And in the 1880 census, when he would have been 20 years old, he shows up, his residence shows up as being the county jail of Carroll County, Virginia. And by 1885, he's gone, and he comes here. And his house is just out the road here, still stands. It's where my grandmother was born. And, you know, he had this totally sustainable farm. And oddly enough, he managed to buy the land and held the minerals and is one of those people who was not hoodooed out of his minerals. Though God knows the coal companies are still trying to get those mineral rights. It's one of the few pieces of property around here that still has the minerals on it. And he was literate. And, you know, this is the man who drank warm sugar water at the end of the day, peeled an apple for his children, read them the Bible, and then played the banjo to them. And his, you know, it's a fascinating story, the details of which I will probably never know.
Well, a friend of mine...
Someone had mentioned the prison system earlier in this conversation just now. And I want to tell you, having worked at it myself for a term, in Vermont, prisoners would either pray or at the very least hope. They didn't go to a private prison because they were so badly treated. This is documented over and over again by them to me. And then a couple of years ago, we usually send our guys to Kentucky that are there for long sentences. They did quite a few $1 million in damage in a riot to the point where they had to close the prison and ship people back out of it. That was Corrections Corporation of America, too.
Yeah.
Because there you really are seen as a number, and you're a pay stub to them. That's all you are. They don't give a shit whether you live or die.
You're right.
No, and they definitely don't care about rehabilitating you and introducing you back into society.
No, and I blame Corrections Corporation of America and our justice system, but mostly Corrections Corporation of America for turning out these guys who are more violent when they come back out because of what they saw in that prison. It's the only way they know to survive in that shitty situation.
Well, there was a movement about 35 years ago, 38 years ago at UC Berkeley in the criminology department, where they were teaching radical criminology, but they closed it down soon afterward. And there's also have been movements recently to talk about restorative justice rather than retributive justice. But I haven't seen anybody talking about restorative justice in the society.
That's because I mean they do it in some other countries, some fairly enlightened countries. But here, Larry, our only interest as far as prison is concerned is in playing out the eternal Calvinistic punishment fetish that this country has. It's puritanical, it's hateful, it's nasty, and for the people who get off on it, I guess it's a really, really good buzz.
It's also very profitable.
Well, yeah.
Who mentioned last week about the fact that you can go into a gun store and the salesperson is really... gets off on selling you a gun.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. That was me.
That's amazing that they would get off on it.
That's not even the worst of it. One of the things I think is really horrible is how they're requiring states to, you know, get to fill like 90% of their jails. I mean, what does that mean? Go bust grannies for littering just to fill the seats?
Right. And, well, and the legislature makes the penalties harsher, takes away discretion from the judge. The judge has to put people in prison that he might not or she might not otherwise imprison, and it just creates a feedback loop that folds back in on itself. Hey guys, this is another one of those evenings. I don't know where the time went, but it sure has been a wonderful conversation. I guess we're going to wrap things up. Is the conversation going to continue later this evening, Duncan, or will that be tomorrow night? Anybody? Bueller?
Right.
Oh, I had my mic up.
Oh.
There you go.
It can continue tonight, but I got company here I got to tend to.
Okay. Well, thanks for...
No, enjoy your company.
Well, thanks for...
we'll have group tomorrow night.
Okay, thanks for moderating, as usual, Duncan, and thanks for the big-time help Thanks everybody, and thanks to Thomas for Thomas and Mo for matching Duncan's birthday challenge, and thank you Duncan for making it. Thanks to Jason who provided the $100 challenge that got us started this evening, and thanks to everybody
thank
who
you.
Responded. Thanks all of you.
And have a great time at the football game, Bob.
Oh, I'm just waiting for halftime.
Well,
okay.
Thank you guys for your intellectual conversation, and I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Kevin.
Yep, thank you.
Y'all have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back with more on Monday, and until then, y'all be well. I'm going to close these channels, and we'll talk later.
All right. Night, y'all.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye now. And so... Thorn in the Front Porch for 30 comes to a close on this, the 17th day of October 2013. Thanks, everybody, for all the many and myriad ways in which you participate and help advance this little effort to have a somewhat reasonably sane conversation. And by God, it's a national one, too, when you think about where everybody is. Thanks. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Their work moderating there. Thank you to Duncan for his moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group going on, I'm not sure how many years now, but a lot of them. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to John Fox for all he does to keep all the technology working in somewhat rational fashion. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. That's where you go if you want to learn how you can help end Appalachia's agony and bring an end to the horrors of mountaintop removal. ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Y'all have a great weekend, even though it's still just Thursday. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
Bad wood underneath.